Donald Trump is really good at this campaign of distraction. You saw the American people start to rise up over the weekend when they heard that Elon Musk was inside Treasury stealing their data. And Donald Trump doesn't want you or anybody else to talk about that today.
Oh, okay. Well, then let's talk about that today, shall we? And tomorrow. And tomorrow.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It is not.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me. Jokers to the right. Here I am. Stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and coast to coast and around the globe on many other fine terrestrial internet and podcast affiliates. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today. All right, shortly before we got off the air last night, Donald Trump may have offered his most ridiculous new Desi Doyen, I guess we call it policy objective?
That's as good a word as any, I guess.
His most ridiculous new policy objective to date. And that is saying something. He wants to remove all of the Palestinians from Gaza, put them somewhere else, or clean them out, clean out that whole area, as he described it, and have the U.S. take ownership of the entire Gaza Strip to rebuild it. It will be ours. Rebuilt, presumably, in Donald Trump's image, and make it the seaside, quote, Riviera of the Middle East. What could possibly go wrong? Since when has occupation by American troops in the Middle East been anything but a positive experience, really, for everyone involved? I see no downsides, but our guests today, Digby and Driftglass, joining us momentarily, they may see things differently. We'll get caught up with them on that idiocy and much more, including the very real threat that Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and their Doge bros are now posing to the American constitutional order itself and, well, frankly, at this point, just about everything that you have heretofore known as the United States of America. Along those lines, also, after we got off air yesterday, the Trump administration said that it is pulling almost all U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID or USAID, workers off the job and out of the field worldwide, moving to all but end the agency's six-decade mission overseas that fought starvation, funded education, and worked to end epidemics. Well, no wonder they wanted to end that. Sounds terrible. The administration notified USAID workers in emails and notice posted online. The latest in a steady dismantling of the aid agency by returning political appointees from President Trump's first term and billionaire Elon Musk's government efficiency teams, who call much of the spending on programs overseas wasteful. The order takes effect just before midnight on Friday. It gives direct hires of the agency overseas, many of them who have been frantically packing up households in expectation of layoffs, gives them 30 days to return home unless they are deemed essential somehow. Contractors who are not determined to be essential also would be fired, according to the notice. The mass removal of thousands of staffers overseas and in D.C. would doom billions of dollars in projects allocated by Congress, lawfully, in some 120 countries, including security assistance to partners such as Ukraine, development work for clean water, job training, education, including for schoolgirls under Taliban rule in Afghanistan. That's got to end. The U.S. is the world's largest humanitarian donor by far, and yet it spends less than 1% of its budget on foreign assistance, a smaller share of its budget than of many other countries. Health programs like those credited with helping end polio and smallpox epidemics and an acclaimed HIV/AIDS program that has saved more than 20 million lives in Africa already have been stopped. So as monitoring and deployment of rapid response teams for contagious diseases like Ebola, hundreds of millions of dollars of food and medication already delivered by U.S. companies are now sitting in ports, not being delivered because of the administration's sudden shutdown of the agency. Thousands of USAID employees already had been laid off and programs worldwide shut down after Trump imposed a sweeping freeze on foreign assistance just after taking office. Despite outcry from Democratic lawmakers, the aid agency has been a special target as the new administration and Musk's budget-slashing Department of Governmental Efficiency, or DOGE, looks to shrink the federal government. Lawmakers said the agency's computer servers were carted away, quote, spent the weekend feeding U.S. aid into the wood chipper, Elon Musk boasted on X. Sure, the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, is delighted about all of that food that will not be delivered to starving people around the world and all of that life-saving medicine that, frankly, he'd have no problem buying for himself or his kids or half the country, frankly, but which via USAID is saving the lives of millions and preventing those diseases from reaching our shores. But, you know, who cares? And you know who else is delighted to see the end of USAID around the world? New York Times headline this morning, quote, foreign strongmen cheer as Musk dismantles USAID agency. When Elon Musk said about, quote, feeding USAID into the wood chipper, as he put it, it wasn't only supporters of President Trump's America First agenda who were cheering the dismantlement of the foreign aid agency. So was the Kremlin. Quote, smart move, said Dmitry Medvedev, the former Russian president who's currently the deputy chair of the country's Security Council. That's what he chimed in from Moscow, which for years had chafed at the U.S. Agency for International Development's actions before forcing it out of that country in 2012. In Hungary, Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who's closely aligned with President Vladimir Putin of Russia, that he celebrated what he called an end to the funding of, quote, globalist organizations on Tuesday. Orban's political director said he, quote, couldn't be happier with what Mr. Musk and Mr. Trump were doing. And by the way, Musk reposted those comments proudly on Twitter on Tuesday. Nayib Bukele, the leader of El Salvador, who has embraced strongman tactics to crack down on gang violence, also struck out at the aid programs, saying in a post that funds had been, quote, funneled into opposition groups, non-governmental organizations with political agendas and destabilizing movements. As protesters in Washington gathered on Monday in front of the USAID headquarters to support the agency, leaders intolerant of dissent rejoiced. Trump's administration was dismantling an agency that they have long seen as a threat, often for pointing up their government's transgressions. Agency grants to promote democracy, human rights, and good governance have gone to support election monitoring groups. Can't have that. Anti-corruption watchdogs. Independent media outlets and human rights organizations. Exactly the kind of oversight that leaders like Mr. Putin detest, reports the Times. Democracy initiatives amounted to a little more than $1.5 billion of USAID funding in 2023. That's a sliver of the agency's annual budget, but they can attract outside attention. Grant recipients often cross swords with the world's authoritarian leaders who view the activities as a threat to their power. Apparently, by the way, so does Donald Trump. Mr. Orban, who met in December with Trump and Musk and other foreign officials, have persisted in asking the U.S. government to end such programs over the years. Well, good news. Now they have. You're welcome, authoritarians around the world. Anything else we can do for you? Thomas Carruthers, a former State Department official who leads the Democracy, Conflict, and Government Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in Washington, said, quote, "It means that anti-corruption activists trying to expose government theft are unable to do that. It means that independent news outlets that are struggling to stay free of government control do not have the resources to do that. It means that lots of people fighting against repressive power will be less able to do that." In Russia, for example, the election monitoring group Golos, which received American grants, documented extensive voting irregularities during the 2011 parliamentary elections there. Anger about those violations led to the biggest protest to date against Mr. Putin's rule and galvanized a broader opposition movement led by the late Alexei Navalny. At the time, Mr. Putin likened foreign grant recipients to Judas. Following year, as he pushed Russia deeper into authoritarianism, he terminated all of the agency's programs in their country. In 2023, after Putin ordered a Russian invasion of Ukraine and led a broad crackdown at home, the co-founder of Golos was jailed for carrying out the activities of a, quote, undesirable organization. In nations once in Moscow's orbit, including Ukraine, the top recipient of USAID funds, a withdrawal of U.S. aid would benefit the Kremlin, analysts say. Elsewhere in the world, particularly in nations where Washington and Beijing have been competing, China could fill the void. Well done, Mr. Trump. Quote, "Trump's administration and Musk's actions have created significant opportunities for China and other authoritarian regimes," said Li King, the founder of China Labor Watch, which seeks to end the forced labor and trafficking of Chinese workers. Well, good cause, but he won't get our help anymore. Maybe China will be able to help him. Iran's criticism of the USAID agency has been more conspiratorial. It has accused the U.S. government of plotting covert operations aimed at overthrowing the Iranian leadership through funding Persian media outlets and human rights organizations focused on Iran. Iran is therefore delighted at what Trump and Musk are now doing. You're welcome, Iran. Musk is using some of the very same rhetoric denouncing the agency as a, quote, criminal organization. And some of Musk's comments were indistinguishable from that of Vyacheslav Volodin, the chair of the lower house of the Russian parliament. He made comments on Telegram on Wednesday where he, too, called USAID a, quote, criminal organization, echoing Elon Musk. Humanitarian initiatives can enhance American soft power, according to supporters, which can buy the U.S. goodwill and leverage in countries across the world for a comparatively small fraction of federal spending. And I know there's a lot of folks on the right, a lot of the MAGA folks, a lot of Republicans who for years have been complaining about all that money we're sending overseas. Why aren't we spending it here on Americans? Well, in 2023, USAID funding represented approximately 0.7% of the total U.S. federal budget. And that was a lot. That was because of Ukraine. In 2021, before the war there, it accounted for just 0.4%. And yet, Trump and Musk are shutting it all down. And the authoritarians are rejoicing. Man, let's take a quick break here. We will come back with two of our old OG blogger pals, Heather Digby Parton and Driftglass, who have had the tendency over the past 20-odd years to sort of be right about everything. So maybe they can offer us some insight here on all of this madness. Pay close attention.
Yes.
They join us next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
$5 Five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Yeah, me too. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. According to AP on Tuesday night, shortly after we got off air, President Donald Trump suggested that displaced Palestinians in Gaza be permanently resettled outside the war-torn territory and proposed that the U.S. take, quote, ownership of Gaza in redeveloping the area into, quote, the Riviera of the Middle East. Trump's brazen proposal appears certain to roil the next stage of talks meant to extend the tenuous ceasefire right now between Israel and Hamas and secure the release of the remaining hostages held in Gaza. The provocative comments, they note, came as talks are ramping up this week with the promise of surging humanitarian aid and reconstruction supplies to help the people of Gaza recover after more than 15 months of devastating conflict. Now, Trump wants to push 1.8 million people to leave the land that they have called home and claim it for the U.S., perhaps with American troops. Quote, the U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip and we will do a job with it too, Trump said in an evening news conference with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu by his side. Quote, we'll make sure that it's done world class. It'll be wonderful for the people, Palestinians mostly we're talking about, he said. Trump outlined his thinking as he held talks with Netanyahu at the White House, where the two leaders also discussed the fragile ceasefire and hostage deal in the Israeli-Hamas conflict. Trump said that the U.S. would redevelop the territory after Palestinians are resettled elsewhere and turn the territory into a place where the, quote, world's people, including Palestinians, how generous, would live. He offered no detail about what authority the U.S. would use to take the land and develop it. And I believe this man is out of his frickin' mind. Egypt, Jordan, and other U.S. allies in the Middle East have cautioned Trump that relocating Palestinians from Gaza would threaten Middle East stability, risk expanding the conflict, and undermine a decades-long push by the U.S. and allies for a two-state solution. So sure, why not? Now, normally, I don't take the bait on stories like this. Like this one, Trump's obsession with buying Greenland or stealing the Panama Canal from Panama, etc. But even I was taken aback by this one, no matter how stupid and ridiculous it seems to be. And while I don't usually waste my time or yours on such stupidity, well, I'm happy to be joined by two favorite guests of ours who no doubt are savoring the stupidity and have plenty of thoughts on both that and the not-so-stupid, even if ridiculous, stuff that we've been trying to make sense of over the past few days in what is only, believe it or not, week three of the second Trump administration. Heather Digby Parton is the much-beloved longtime blogger known as simply Digby. She's also the proprietor of the long-running Hullabaloo blog and a regular award-winning contributor at Salon.com. And our other fellow old-school blogger pal, Driftglass, is here once again as well. He is sometimes known as Bill, and he is ringing in, as usual, from the cornfield resistance from what he describes as flyover country, Illinois, where he and his wife, Blue Gal, or Fran, produce the Pro Left podcast each and every week, come rain or shine. Hey, guys, welcome back. I told you I was going to be leaning on you a little more frequently in the days ahead. So thanks for rushing back to help us out.
Oh, no, no sweat.
All right. As I said, normally I don't take the bait. I mean, we haven't once on this show even talked about the ridiculous obsessions that Trump seems to have with buying Greenland and making Canada the 51st state, or invading the Panama Canal, much less renaming the Gulf of Mexico. But on this one, on this Gaza scheme, I kind of feel like I actually have to talk about it. But am I just being trolled, Heather, to, you know, sort of force me to look away from all of the damage that he is actually doing? Or does this dude actually believe any of this is possible in any way, shape, or form?
Well, I put me in the camp of those who thinks he actually believes this. I don't, you know, the idea that he's got some, you know, strategy to distract from all the terrible things that Elon Musk is doing, I don't think that's true. I think they've just divided up the work. And basically, Trump has been convinced somehow. I mean, if you've been observing him as closely as all of us on this, you know, on this show have for the last 10 years, you can see that this is a new level. This is a, this delusions of grandeur about taking over other countries is actually new for him. This isn't something that he's ever done before. And of course, you know, the whole thing may add up to nothing. We know that. But this one in particular has a very real immediate consequence. There's a very fragile ceasefire right now in Gaza. And all he did was just basically, you know, infuriate virtually everybody in the Middle East by suggesting that he was going to ethnically cleanse Gaza and send in U.S. troops to, you know, first of all, you know, get rid of all the decimated buildings and put up a Trump, you know, golf course or something in there. And, you know, nobody's for that. You could see Benjamin Netanyahu and his right-wing allies were just thrilled at this because it ends up basically shutting down any notion that there could possibly be some kind of a lasting peace agreement. And that is not what they want, because what they want is, you know, Netanyahu has to stay in power over there. And because otherwise, you know, he could go to jail. And so they were absolutely thrilled to have him do this. I mean, he's a useful idiot for them. But he's a powerful, useful idiot. And the stuff he was saying was absolutely nuts. But I do think he believes it. I absolutely think he believes he can do it. He is really suffering from what the clinicians call grandiose delusion. He truly believes that he is now, and he wants to win the Nobel Peace Prize so that he can, you know, beat Barack Obama. And this is one of the avenues by which he thinks he can do it. And I have no doubt that it's real. I mean, I don't know if he can actually accomplish it, but I have no doubt that he thinks he can.
Winning the Nobel Peace Prize by ethnically cleansing an entire portion of the Middle East.
He's going to build some nice condos somewhere, so they'll be really happy. They'll be thrilled. It's no biggie. Just they can't wait to get out and go live in those Trump condos. They're excited about it.
Driftglass, we were told by Trump's supporters, maddeningly, by the way, in particular, his supporters on the left, that, oh, Trump is a man of peace. He didn't start any new wars. Now, he wasn't a man of peace. He's incredibly aggressive with the U.S. military in his first term. But, you know, now he essentially, if I'm understanding the scheme, wants the U.S. Army to invade and hold Gaza as a U.S. property. I'm not sure on whose authority, but I'm wondering what could possibly go wrong with that, Driftglass?
Well, any statement that begins with supporters of Trump told us is automatically null and void to begin with. So you can, they'll say anything and reverse themselves the next day. This is Bibi Netanyahu's dream come true. This is not just settlements. This is ethnically cleansing an entire country. It's a two-state solution. It's, you know, state of confusion and state of chaos. So yeah, way to go, man. Well pulled.
Or the state of Israel and the state of the United States. Where that's two states, sure.
Okay. Another 51st state. That'll
there
be great.
Go.
And if you want to displace a bunch of Palestinians to, 200,000 people in Tennessee, 100,000 in Kentucky, a bunch in Alabama, if you want to hand over some
Florida, baby, Palm
Florida,
Beach,
Florida.
I think that'd be perfect for them.
Florida and Texas. Yeah, absolutely. Let's see how the build the wall crowd feels about that.
That's where we're going to send the Palestinians while they're rebuilding the.
Yeah, hang out there.
Okay.
You know, give them whatever they want. Give them citizenship. It'll be beautiful. It'll
I see no downsides. Yeah, they will welcome them. Yeah.
I can't help remembering that one of the big Trump contributors in this last election was Miriam Adelson, Sheldon Adelson's widow. And she and Shelley Adelson had grand plans for greater Israel. That's what they wanted. This is what they bought. I mean, Elon Musk bought his way into the Treasury, bought this 60% share in this president, and he's getting what he paid for. And Mary Madison and all those supporters are getting what they paid for. Now, it's insane. It's on the face of it. It's nuts. But so what? And I'd say this is tossing a match onto a pile of oily rags, but the fire is already burning. Mm. This is adding napalm to napalm, yeah. And everybody knows it. And I do think Trump is narcissistic enough and stupid enough and willing to listen to his real estate developer friends enough to say, sure, why not? Let's just move people out. I did it to my buildings all the time. I got rid of people, added more people.
True.
So why not? What's the difference?
Right. Eminent domain. That's what he's, sure. He's basically.
And if the U.S. Then takes the West Bank as well, why, we would own it from the river to the sea, I guess.
Yeah.
I have no reason to believe that any of this will actually work out. Driftglass, nor the idea of the U.S. taking over Greenland or Canada or even the Panama Canal. Tell me, what is, as you see it, this obsession of renewing American imperialism? What's it about for this guy? Is it something that he actually is interested in? Or, as I think Heather sort of dismissed, is it meant as chum for all of us in the media to obsess about while he's, carrying out the real damage to the U.S. constitutional order and we're talking about this idiocy?
Well, the empires of old got rich by conquest and plunder. You just steal another country. You just take a region and you take the resources and you sell their people into slavery. That's how you got rich as an emperor. And I think Trump just says, well, why can't I? I mean, there's no one stopping me. We have a big military, a bunch of targets around the world with no military at all and lots of minerals and oil and stuff like that. And I can, why not just spin this out idea? And if it doesn't work out, I'll just pretend I never said it. My followers will pretend I never said it, and it'll be fine. But he really does just keep rattling the door, seeing which door will open. And this one is, who knows? I've got some backers in the Middle East. I have a bunch of money sewn up in Saudi Arabia. They bribe my kids. They bribe my son-in-law. They bribe me. This serves a lot of interests. And I will go down in history as the greatest expander of the American Soviet co-prosperity sphere in history.
All right. I think we've given this guy 12 minutes on this nonsense. Let me move to some what I think is actually disturbing news, not just insane, but also insane, but actually disturbing. Heather, I think that, frankly, I may have underestimated Elon Musk and the so-called Doge project here before Trump took office, mostly because, I thought that, this is ridiculous, that it's this Department of Government Efficiency. It's not an actual government agency. They have no actual governing authority to do anything. They can talk about what they want to do. They can make recommendations, but they can't actually, cut budgets or departments, et cetera, without approval by Congress. But as one of the former NOAA staffers, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration staffer, said today about what Musk and Doge seem to be preparing for NOAA and for the National Weather Service, quote, there is no transparency. They just show up wherever they want, do whatever they want. They're following through on major budget cuts and major staffing cuts, adding, I think the strategy here is, well, we're just going to do it and dare someone to stop us. And by the time they stop us, we'll have destroyed it. So, Heather, A, does that seem to be the strategy? B, will it work? And if it does work, how would it be stopped and by whom? Because they seem to be doing this across the whole of government right now, as insane and unauthorized as it is.
Well, I just saw on X that Elon Musk retweeted a headline that said that they're into the Medicare system now. And that he says that this is where the big fraud is and they're going after it. So just, that's another one here. All the seniors, go get your meds and get your checkups, because that's about to be, at least compromised, if nothing else.
He shut down The entire USAID, billions of dollars, sent everyone home from the Washington headquarters, is now recalling every employee from around the world, because that wasn't just a bad apple with a worm in it. That was an entire ball of worms. Medicare, you're saying, he is saying, is now where all of the real fraud is at?
That's where the real fraud is. That's what he says. And, you know, there is such a thing as Medicare fraud. In fact, one of the big Republican senators, Rick Scott, is probably the greatest Medicare fraudster in history. But, you know, whatever. To answer your question, look, I don't know how much damage he can do. None of us do, because there's zero transparency in what he's doing. And he's got a bunch of kids, apparently, you know, age 19 to 23 or something, who some of them still in college. That are going in and messing around in the computer systems to try and determine what the fraud and abuse is, that they're going to take care of it. They're going to be making decisions about who gets paid and who doesn't. And yes, they're planning on getting rid of it. I think USAID is gone, to tell you the truth. I see no way to claw that back.
USAID.
I think it's gone. They're recalling everybody. They're shutting it down. They just told the General Services Administration to, end the leases on 50% of the federal government's office buildings around the country. So this is wild. And it has to do, I mean, this is his philosophy, which is you go in and you shut everything down. And then you go and, you know, rebuild it and put things back. Well, you know, you can do that with Twitter, because who gives a damn? Right. If one of the functions of it doesn't work for a day, and you come back, okay, well, maybe we really need to put that back in. People need to get their DMs after all, or whatever. That's Twitter. And maybe even with Tesla or with SpaceX or whatever. That this is the federal government. You shut down Medicare for a few days, or you shut down, and they already have done this in the Office of Management and Budget put out that order to freeze everything, and then the courts put a restraining order on it, but apparently a lot of the agencies didn't get the word, because a bunch of stuff is still frozen. People aren't getting paid. Vendors aren't getting paid. You're starting to see the breakdown slowly, and it'll happen much more quickly. So the damage is going to be huge. And as to your question as to what can stop it, I have no earthly idea, because the only person I think that can do it is Donald Trump. And that would be, he'd have to fire Elon Musk and get rid of all these Doge people and say, no, we're not going to do it this way. And he has shown absolutely no, you know, indication that he might do that. And we've all been, of course, saying, oh, well, let's humiliate him. Let's try and troll him about Musk being the president, whatever. That's just not going anywhere. The Republicans in Congress, forget about it. The courts, maybe, but that could take, what, 2 or 3 years? Well, and in the meantime, the devastation is, you know, monumental.
Let me talk about the courts here, because, they can do all of this, and then, somebody might try to clean it up later, but there is this matter of what they are doing appears to be strictly unlawful, in that, you know, organizations like USAID are created by an act of Congress, and it seems like you can't just do away with it. Driftglass, you know, if all of this stuff is blocked somehow by the courts, hopefully sooner rather than later, but whenever it is, if it's blocked potentially even by the corrupted U.S. Supreme Court, and, you know, found to be, oh, this is unlawful, it was stood up by Congress, it must remain. If that happens, if there is such a pronouncement, do you expect Elon Musk and the Doge bros and, frankly, the Trump administration to actually follow such court orders? Or will they simply, you know, defy them with, yeah, you and what army sort of thing?
The latter. I mean,
really?
I don't know. I was in Chicago for 25 years under Richie Daley, and I remember vividly him bulldozing Migs Field. Wasn't supposed to. It was illegal. He said, national security, bulldozed. Wasn't supposed to bulldoze Soldier Field, which he did, because a national historical monument. But he did it anyway. And his theory was, after it's done, who's going to undo it? It's already wrecked. You can't undo the damage I've done. Therefore, I win. And take me to court if you want, but it's too late now. And I think that, you know, as someone who wasted a lot of my youth reading Ayn Rand in Atlas Shrugged, The hero of Atlas Shrugged promised to stop the engine of the world. And once New York had gone dark, you know, he and his friends would rebuild the world in their image. And that is exactly what Elon Musk is trying to do. He's trying to shut down the engine of the United States, kill everything in sight. And then once that's been laid waste to, he and his Hunger Force, Aqua Force team, incel team will rebuild it in their image. And I think that there's no stopping him unless what happens, and the only thing I can think of is, number one, I understand that a lot of that stuff is written in COBOL, which, you know, hasn't been recompiled since the Carter administration. And good luck to these kids figuring out how COBOL works. And millions and millions of lines of code. That's how it actually works. That's how the actual payment system works. Number two, I remember, I think it was Dan Rosenkowski from Illinois, who decided to do something with Social Security. And he was mobbed by angry senior citizens on television. And man, he walked that back so fast. If you see a bunch of people from the villages, a bunch of folks who are on Medicare, who are wearing Trump hats, screaming, "What the hell are you doing to my Social Security, to my Medicare, to my Medicaid, which my, you know, my mom has to have to, so we can put her in a home?" You might see some quick turnaround. And Trump is perfectly willing to change his mind on a dime and just lie about everything and say, "I never authorized anything." Well, but it's going to take public outrage in the streets to turn this around by the right people.
Yeah, and I was going to say, perhaps if Ayn Rand teaches us anything, that you can share with us what, you know, what happens when this crew does not follow court orders. If the court says, "No, you can't do that," and they say, and Trump says, "Well, try and stop me. I am immune. You've already said I'm immune from all crimes. I can pardon anyone who helps me." You know, what then? If they do defy the courts, we're counting on the old men and women from the villages to start marching? That's
yeah,
our,
pretty much.
That's our army? Okay.
Well, and I got to say, there's another line of defense, because Ayn Rand would look at everything Trump and Musk is doing and say, "Great, kill it all, shut it all down. It's awesome. You should keep doing this. Everything, you know, all taxes, theft, all regulation is communism." So, and that's what the other thing Musk was musing about, as I recall, was just, "Let's just stop all government regulation, stop everything, all environmental, every regulation, and then we'll figure out what we really need afterwards, after the destruction." But I do think there's a little sign of hope in the reason you see a lot of Democratic senators, you know, rising up on their ancient knees and taking, you know, taking a stand on things, is because a whole bunch of Democratic governors, including mine, called them up and said, "Get off your butts and do something." And I think there is an actual, the younger generation in the House and the Democratic governors out there are actually starting to mount some kind of viable opposition. Plus, I have great faith in reality. I mean, I have a great faith in gravity. And then Trump and Musk are stepping off a 100-story building. And it might seem like you're flying on the way down, but that concrete comes up real fast. And I just think that you start depriving Americans who you promised a whole bunch of stuff to, like lower egg prices, you start taking their stuff away, and they start showing up at the Social Security office. There's nothing there for them. You're going to have old people riots on your hand.
Yeah.
And then the fun's really going to start, because who is the mob going to hold responsible for everything now the Republicans run everything?
Heather, when we spoke to both of you guys a few weeks ago, just after Trump was sworn in, I think we were all sort of pretty sanguine. I know I was, about what appeared to be some of his, you know, toothless executive orders. He didn't seem to have his act together. The promised day one deportations of millions of people didn't happen. He was, you know, sort of bungling things out of the gate. Are we still sanguine now that DOGE is underway? And if not, what's most worrying to you at this point about what we have seen over the past 4 or 5 days since these guys have been, you know, doing whatever his DOGE bros have been doing for the past 4 or 5 days?
Well, I'm not sanguine. I think a lot of his executive orders have been just, you know, the usual Trump nonsense, him just, you know, declaring something that's already happened or something like that. So, you know, a lot of that you can ignore. But I think that the Doge thing is a genuine, I mean, we're in a constitutional crisis. These people have no authority to do what they're doing. The Republicans have, you know, absolutely laid down and said, you know, hey, whatever you need, Trump, you know, here, please give me your boots so I can lick them. They have absolutely no integrity, no pride, and no sense that they have any prerogatives. I mean, they're actually going to confirm RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard.
Yes,
you know,
amazing.
I mean, and they didn't have to. You know, they could have gotten away with not doing that. So they're completely useless, and that's a big part of the problem. However, and so I, you know, yes, I'm kind of terrified by how far this can go. And I think Jamelle Bouie had a great op-ed in the New York Times today talking about how, you know, he kind of laid all this out in rather stark, bracing terms. And at the end of it, he said, but look, a lot of the damage has already been done. You know, the weaknesses have been exposed. We're seeing now where, you know, how this can happen. And even if we manage to survive this and maybe, you know, usurp Trump in some way or end up, you know, just kind of getting through it, the danger is there. We're going to have to rethink the whole system because there's no way you can just go back once you've seen what is possible to do and how impotent the system is in dealing with it. But I will say one thing, and I just want to add this, is that I just saw something come across my feed that said the National Association of Evangelicals describes as devastating news state's halt to refugee support and says the demolishment of USAID has cut critical foreign aid and funding.
Yeah.
That's also another area where some things could start to push back. I'm hearing some friends in the religious communities or whatever that people are freaking out. And that could have some influence somewhere. And then, of course, there's also if people rise up, whether it's in the villages or it's evangelicals or, you know, forget people like us. We don't count. I'm talking about people who count in this country who are Republicans. If there are pockets of those people, if they start freaking out, you do have an election coming in 2 years, and there may be just a tiny bit of concern that backing this stuff from the Republicans in the U.S. Congress, that they may not see it as being quite the wonderful thing that they're acting like it is right now. So, you know, that's a tiny glimmer. I'm not really saying it's going to happen, but you never know.
Well, I do think there's things become real when people hear the details and the stories. You know, it's one thing for years Republicans have been like, you know, why are we spending so much money on overseas, you know, foreign aid? That should be spent for us here in America. Well, A, it's a little tiny amount, you know, less than 1%, about 0.5% of the entire U.S. budget. But B, when you find out what it is that U.S. aid actually does, who it's affecting, the starvation, it's stopping the AIDS medicine that is keeping HIV from coming back here, Ebola from coming back here, tuberculosis from coming, all of these things that it actually does, all of a sudden people are like, yeah, well, wait, why are we cutting that? That doesn't seem good, but they don't know it. It's an abstraction until we hear the stories from the media. And so I'm hoping the media tells those stories. I think that's something that could, you know, turn a corner for when people realize what is actually being taken down, taken away from them. Driftglass, I got to say, of all of the things that are going on, including the heartbreaking story of what's happening at USAID, I still remain most troubled by the notion that these guys have taken over the U.S. Treasury's checkbook, the check writing system that cuts the checks for 95% of the payments made by the U.S. government, about $6 trillion annually. A 25-year-old Doge bro kid is now in there messing with the code of this computer system, perhaps COBOL, as you said. But Driftglass, last time you were on, you predicted there would be a major economic calamity under Trump. Is this the major economic calamity that you predicted last time we spoke, that you expected to see in this Trump administration, or is it the basis of it as you see it?
Why, yes, of course. I predicted this exactly. I predicted exactly the kids who take over.
You said that there would be a major calamity, an economic calamity that we don't even understand yet, I think, that it was, you know, just of earth-shaking proportions, as I remember it.
Well, I have a great deal of faith in arrogant stupidity, that they're just going to go do dumb stuff, and they're going to keep doing dumb, crazy stuff because Donald Trump believes tariffs aren't really a tax. And we're just going to slap a bunch of people around the world. And we're just going to cut things off. And we're just going to try things. And no matter, and we're already very fragile right now. We have more or less just come out of a pandemic. The economy is on the upswing now, thank you to the Biden-Harris administration. It had nothing to do with any Republicans out there trying to drag it down. But I just have faith that these idiots driving drunk, blindfolded in a car through the crowded city streets are going to hit something, and it's going to be bad, because everything they've tried to do and everything they're trying to do is a terrible idea. And terrible ideas have terrible consequences. And if they get even four or five of those things through, you're going to see a disaster of epic proportion. If you start landing the U.S. Marines in Palestine to put people off their land, that's World War III. And that's certainly going to have an economic blowback. That's going to have an economic problem. Mm-hmm. It's just that there's so many awfully stupid things that they're doing all at once that I have faith that collectively they're going to cause some sort of calamity. I mean, you know that eggs now cost in some places $7 plus a dozen.
Yes.
Oh, and no. No, you're talking $10 a year.
Yeah, come on out to California. Yeah.
The only person who has control over the price of eggs is the President of the United States. He has a button on his desk or dial, and it goes right or left. And once your MAGA friends start looking around, seeing surcharges at Waffle Houses, you want scrambled eggs, that'll be $20 up front. Then we can start talking to them about, well, no, that's your president. Presidents control egg prices. You know that. But it's that combination of things. You know, I forget who said, like, a disaster is the result of like six decisions in a row. And I think we're up to decision number four or so, but it was going to be something.
Yikes.
Because these guys just are this way.
The upside, as we discussed on the show yesterday, of all of this Musk nonsense seems to be that it is helping to organize the opposition to Trump, too, in recent days. We talked about it a bit yesterday, but it does seem like the outlines of a real resistance movement, Heather, at least an opposition movement, is finally coming into view. Do you see it? Does it appear that way to you as well?
It does. I mean, I admit I was getting a little nervous because it seemed like everybody I talked to wasn't paying attention. And they were going, oh, I can't look at the news. I'm still traumatized and blah, blah. I'm going, hey, look at the news. Okay, you need to do this.
Yep.
And suddenly this week, I have seen the difference. Something, they're off the mat. People are off the mat now, and they are actually engaging. I'm getting texts from people, civilians I haven't heard from in a long time that are talking to me. I think it's happening. I think something just broke. Maybe it's the USAID thing, or the tariffs were one thing that got people going, what, you know, what is that? What's that about? And so I think somehow or another, I think people are starting to do that, and they're starting to be organizing around it. So I would expect that we're going to see more of it. I think people are finally kind of recognizing that this is way beyond what they expected. By the way, nobody voted for Elon Musk. And that is something I think that is a powerful slogan that people should use all the time. Nobody voted for Elon Musk. Nobody knew that he was going to be in charge of the U.S. government. I don't care who you are. And if that gives one Trump voter the ability to say, well, I really love Trump, but I don't know about Elon, you know, I don't really like that. That's good. That gives people a way out so that they don't have to admit they were wrong.
Heather, I know I got to get you out of here, but I think that there was this idea that the resistance to Trump's first term somehow did not work because he was reelected after all. So Democrats thought they, you know, would try a different tactic this time, you know, see if they could find common ground. But there's no finding common ground with this guy. He does not negotiate. He steals things. But the idea that the resistance didn't work the first time, I don't think that's quite right. I think it did work. He lost the election after all. So that worked when people took to the streets in resistance and in the halls of Congress. I don't think we should have thrown that idea away.
I don't think so either. I always thought it was ridiculous. And I was hearing also that it wasn't true, that some of the groups like Indivisible and, you know, Swing State Project and all those things, they were still together. They were still working, and they went to work right after the election. So I don't know if that was ever true. It just, everybody was so demoralized. But one of the things that has happened, and I think it's truly important to mention this, is that you're starting to see the House Democrats recognize that they have a big leverage point with the debt ceiling and the budget coming up.
Yes.
If they play this right, they can actually start to change the trajectory a little bit of what Trump wants. That debt ceiling is a sort of Damocles hanging over him, and they know that. Let's just hope they have the guts and the fortitude to actually do what's necessary here. And that means they have to absolutely obstruct and hold out. They cannot negotiate on this.
Drift Glass, any thoughts on any of the above there before I let you both go?
Well, real quick, it's miserable here. It's freezing. There's drizzle. It's February. Nobody wants to go outside. But I drove past my state capitol about 2 hours ago, and there was a fairly large size group of protesters out there, all of whom with impeach Trump, impeach Elon Musk, yep, and a bunch of things I can't say on the radio. And they didn't seem at all deterred, and they didn't seem at all upset. They were hanging together and enjoying each other's company. And, you know, on a miserable cold day in Springfield, Illinois, a fairly large crowd of people gathered at the state capitol to say, enough, we're not down with this, and you should listen to us as well, because we're here and we're angry, and we're not sitting down for this. So I take some hope from that.
Hope from Flyover Country, Illinois. Thank you very much. Drift Glass, by the way, please send us some of those cheap $7 eggs. I think we would all appreciate that here on the West Coast. By the way, Trader Joe's doesn't change their egg prices.
Just, this is true.
Just
they
saying.
Will.
They will?
They
all
will.
Right. They
may
we'll
be forced
see.
To.
All right.
Have faith in capitalism.
Heather Digby Parton can be found, of course, at digbysblog.net and on the Blue Skies at digby56, as well as salon.com. And you can find Drift Glass at proleftpod.com, where you can download his Professional Left podcast each and every week. Thanks, Drift Glass. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Des, I didn't get to ask you, and we've actually never talked about this, the resistance, which, you know, so many Democrats, you know, said, oh, it didn't work the first time. I think it did work the first time. It slowed him down. It kept him from doing some of his worst things. And it included two impeachments, which certainly slowed him down. But this notion that it didn't work somehow because he got reelected 4 years later, I ain't buying it.
Yeah, I don't agree with that either. I think the resistance definitely works. I think every single action any person, any one person, any group, anywhere can take will be helpful. Because I think we're in a very extremely serious situation, as both Heather and Drift Glass mentioned. Trump and Musk, I believe, are blasting out the foundations of the U.S. government and its services that help everyday Americans, because what they really want is your money to pay for their billionaire tax cuts.
Yeah.
So to them, they don't really care if these departments and agencies cannot be restored or rebuilt. They're not interested in that at all. They just want the money, your money.
They will care when, and we joked about it, but when the people from the villages show up, you know, when they are fighting mad.
I believe Trump will care. I don't think Musk will.
I was going to say, I don't know that even Trump or Musk will care. The people who will care, however, are in Congress. The people who care... even though 2026 elections are 2 years away, now is the time when, you know, votes will be happening that will be brought up in 2026. And there's a lot of Congress members, senators who are in marginal districts who will be held accountable for the votes that they make today. And, you know, so they may not be held accountable until 2026, but they know right now they are facing that election in 2 years. That is a way that you can get them. You have some leverage there. Also, and Heather pointed this out about the budget and the debt ceiling coming up. Josh Marshall notes the Democrats' available lever to exert power over the president is on the budget, and particularly the debt ceiling. The two are conjoined. He says that's 90% of the game. In fact, Republicans can't pass a budget without the help of Democrats. They can't raise the debt ceiling without the help of Democrats. And the debt ceiling is going to have to be raised because Donald Trump wants his tax cuts, and that's going to cost trillions of dollars. So the Democrats do have some leverage here. They can't go in when you hear people say, why don't the Democrats stop this? Why isn't somebody doing something about this? It's not like they can just go in and stop it. It's not like they're being lazy. Maybe they are lazy, but that's not why they're not stopping. They just don't have that power.
They
but
don't have
what
the
they
authority
do have
anymore,
is
because Republicans have it.
But where they have it is the leverage on the budget, which is coming up in March, mid-March, or we're facing another government shutdown, this time with a Republican president and Republican House and Senate, and the debt ceiling. So that gives them some leverage. They need to start using it as the opposition is finally coming together and realizing, yeah, Democrats, this is on you. You guys got, you know, you got to do something here. You got to take the lead. They're not going to take the lead. The people take the lead.
That gives them the space
they
to
follow,
do that. Yes.
But yeah.
And then I think that you can help your representatives understand what it is that you want them to do. If you call your congressmember, 202-224-3121. Call them now. They really, really do want to hear from you.
Give them encouragement.
Okay, yeah.
Let them know you got their back if they do the right thing, and you don't got their back if they don't do the right thing.
Particularly if you have a Republican representative. 202-224-3121 is the Senate and Congress switchboard. They will direct you to the right location, 202-224-3121. Write it down. Call them every day.
By the way, I would say it's just as important if they're Democratic at
True.
This point, not just the Republicans. Call those Democrats. Like I said, let them know you have their back. Let them know you don't if they don't do the right thing and get busy. All right, we got to get out. Thanks again to Heather and Driftglass and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. That is a gift that others who donate make possible for you when they come on by bradblog.com and hit a donate button. But you can do the same for someone else. Pay it forward.
There you go. And you can also, of course, share the show with anybody that you can. You can like share it. You can hate share it.
You can do all of that. We're happy to have it shared however you do it. We're also happy to have you stop by on social media and talk about the show. Share it there as well. In any event, bradblog.com/donate if you just want to help us stay on your public airwaves. You can drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. That's it. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you, who drop by bradblog.com/donate.